What up, what up, what up, everyone? This is the Dr. Football Podcast. I'm Dr. Dennis Tien here live at long last recording in the Hedgebetter Studios in the same room, finally, as my main man, Justin Fine, the CEO of Hedgebetter. Justin, what's going on? What's good, my man?
Well, there's a lot good today, right? We got legal sports betting coming into Massachusetts, right? That's obviously huge for us, everything we're doing over here. I mean, it's about time, right? People were just, for the longest time, going up to New Hampshire or, you know, down to Rhode Island, Connecticut.
Or to the guy around the corner.
Around the corner, exactly. So now Massachusetts smartened up a little bit. So, yeah, we got sports betting coming here.
I mean, that's the big news of the day.
Yeah.
And what from what I've read in the paper, they're actually saying they're going to have this off the ground for this football season, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But I think with some of the casinos they've had in the state and with DraftKings being here, it's ready. Some of these companies are ready to go.
So I actually heard that the Encore had their sportsbook room ready over a year ago.
Yes.
And they were just waiting.
Just waiting.
Yeah.
For the go-ahead.
So it's here, finally. So it doesn't surprise me. I think all the pieces are in play, and over the next couple of weeks, we're going to see it all come into, you know, effect.
I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing for the Commonwealth. It will bring in revenue to the Commonwealth. Better to go to the state than to go into a bookie's pocket.
Definitely.
So I'm all for that. I hope the state is smart with the money. That's another issue altogether.
Yeah.
I hope they use it to create opportunity for people. I really do, because this is a windfall. This is going to be a ton of money.
For sure.
It's going to be a ton of money.
For sure.
This is going to be the biggest cash cow. I think, you know, where else will this state in the foreseeable future? They've already legalized marijuana.
Right.
Where else is there going to be a revenue source like this coming down the pipeline? So honestly, to our state elected politicians, you know, I'm a local elected politician, but to our state,
right,
use this wisely and selectively, because this is an opportunity for the citizens of the Commonwealth.
Yeah, 100%. A lot of people have been asking for it. And it's here, and we can do college sports too. Some states didn't let you do that, right? But Massachusetts, we're gonna have it all. We're gonna have pro sports.
No BC though. No UMass. You can't bet on college teams in Massachusetts.
I guess that's reasonable
Nominal, right?
Yeah.
But you know what I found was really interesting is that the fee. Let me correct myself. Vig. It's a fee. Okay, is 20% for an online bet, but 15% for an in person. But
right,
who's gonna go drive to like Encore to place a bet? It's all gonna be in person. So it's just kind of like a.
So I gotta look. So I'm not sure. I saw that. I don't think that's the fee that the bettor pays. I think that's the fee that the books are paying.
I see.
Yeah, so that's like their kickback. They're kicking back, I think, 20% of mobile wages and 15% of in-person. I could have that wrong.
It's true. And there haven't been a lot of details put out there. So, and it's all happening in the last day. So we really got to familiarize ourselves with it.
It's developing right now, sure.
But that makes me feel better. You know, I mean, obviously, the vast majority of the revenue is coming online. It's
right,
going to be from people on their phones, putting in
bets.
And I hope they do it right. I really do. I'm sure Encore will have it all ready to go. And all the live stuff, half times, everything, you know, make it. And I hope people use it responsibly. I really do.
Yeah, for sure. From what the early rumors are, we're going to see about seven sports books that were awarded a license in Massachusetts. So we're going to see like seven sanctioned sports books. From what I've seen initially, I think that includes DraftKings, the Barstool Sportsbook,
right,
FanDuel, a couple of the big ones, right? And even, I don't know, I have to look into who's powering the Encore, but I believe it's William Hill, which is obviously a big one that powers a bunch of them. So all the major guys that, you know, have their foot in the door everywhere else. So should be interesting.
Good, good. Yeah. Well, let's see what happens. If they get it up, I mean, the start of the NFL season is literally like, I think, 5.5 weeks away. I think it's 5 weeks from Thursday. So, I mean, if they can get this up and running by then, that's a miracle. It took them like 10 years to do the big dig, but they're going to get sports betting up in 5 weeks. I don't know.
Are you ready for it? Are you ready for the environment where you can just pull out your phone and?
Oh, it's not going to make a difference to me. Like, I mean, you know, like it is not. I mean, I'm I am totally ready for it. Yeah. Like, but there will be people that will have a problem with it. And I think that we should be considerate of that, you know, when they roll out the system, I'm sure they will, you know, they always kind of put that like phony baloney 1-800 number and all this stuff. Like if you have a problem, call this number. It's like, you know, setting people up, but you know what? The reality is that sports betting was happening to such an extent anyways, that it really makes sense to at least control it.
100%. And now that you've seen the rest of the states do it, it's like, you know, pissing it off the pot. You gotta do it now.
Right, exactly. All right, well, listen, let's get to it. Let's talk a lot. There's always this time of year, there's things, the things are heating up. Things are heating up in Foxborough, and there are things to talk about. It's early. We haven't seen anything in a preseason game yet. We haven't seen an actual game yet. But, you know, there are topics that are coming up. And I want to start by talking about what we're hearing from Patriots training camp from the first few days in the early returns. And I got to tell you, Justin, I was at training camp today. I went down to Foxborough this morning. I had the morning off. I brought the kids down. They had a ball. Okay. But I want to tell you, if you're listening, you know, and you're wondering who's running the show for this Patriots offense. And when we recorded last Saturday, there was still a little bit of uncertainty about what the hierarchy was going to be and who was going to be where. I can tell you, I can confirm for you that this offense is running through Matt Patricia. And Belichick has his hands all over the offense, it looks like to me. But Matty P is the man that Mac is going to on the sideline. Matty P is the man that's holding the papers, that's holding the cards, and looks to be calling the plays. And I don't know about you, but I find that disturbing. I really find that disturbing because I was never a Matty Patricia fan when he was a defensive coach. I thought he was an overrated defensive coach. I thought the Patriots defense got better when he left, when Brian Flores took over, not worse. And I have my doubts about giving the keys to the franchise and a second-year quarterback to Matt Patricia. I would feel better about this setup if it was Joe Judge, as crazy as that sounds, because Judge at least has been a head coach, called plays, you know, run an offense, a bad offense, but at least he has some relevant experience. Matt Patricia has none. Matt Patricia has no experience, okay? He has Belichick's faith, and that's it. And what I want to say from my observations today is that the reason I find this so a little more concerning than I might otherwise, because we're only like 5 days into camp, so it's like, come on, you know, right? What can you read into it? But their offense looked like crap today. They looked awful. And it was not just the quarterback looked bad. In fact, it looked to me like Mac was almost stifled because they were out of sync. Everything was super vanilla. And the most concerning thing is that they got absolutely no separation on defense. Their wide receivers were stifled. There was no place. They could have had Joe Montana, Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning throwing the ball. It would not have mattered because there was no place to throw the ball. Now, maybe that's an overreaction 5 days into camp. Maybe they're doing things schematically to make it harder for the Patriots offense. That, you know, maybe it's early season kinks. I don't know. Maybe it's too soon to push the panic button. But Justin, are you reading anything into the fact that the early returns are that this offense looks bad, the defense is stifling them? And let's put this in context, because no one has high expectations for this Patriots defense.
Right.
This isn't the 85 Bears. This is a defense we think is going to struggle all year, and they're suffocating this offense. Is there anything that can be read into that, or are we just all overreacting? It's early in camp. We have nothing else to talk about. The Red Sox suck, so we're talking about this.
No, so look, I don't think that what we're seeing now is necessarily an indication that we can't be a good offense come the season, even later in the season. I do think you're right, though, that, like, what else did we expect? Like, did you expect to go into camp with, you know, a second-year quarterback, a few new pieces, in no offensive coordinator, and see them, you know, come out, you know, firing like, you know, a high-flying offense would? I don't think, like, I guess... From what you're saying, I feel like they're where I would expect them to be right now. Does that mean they can't get better? No, but like, I mean, you know, would you expect them to be hitting training camp and look like a well-oiled machine?
No, and you're right. I mean, in a sense, yeah, this is where they should be when you consider where they are, who they have, and what the expectation should be. But what I guess what really makes, to bring that kind of whole opening thing I just said back together, is what makes me so concerned is I don't trust Matt Patricia. So when I see them come out and they look like this, and I'm like, well, it's hard for me to just rest easy that this is a work in progress, right, and it's going to improve. Like if they had Josh McDaniels still, I'd say, hey, they're working some kinks out. They got wheels in motion. They're working some things in camp. When I see them look like crap, like they looked today, and like apparently they've looked so far the last 3 or 4 days, and I know that it's Matt Patricia that's the man that's calling the shots, I find that concerning. I have no confidence in Matt Patricia's ability to right the ship and get this offense together. And why would I? He's never done it before.
No, I mean, I don't disagree at all. And I think if you're a Patriots fan, you do have to be concerned. And that's going to be a big storyline that develops, right? Like, you know, I think for this Patriots team, we all expected the offense to take a little step forward. We expected Mac Jones to come out and really improve. And especially, you know, like we're going to get to Bill Belichick's comments. It seems like Mac is improving and he is on that right trajectory, right? We expected adding someone like Devontae Parker to help, giving some of those guys like Kendrick Bourne, Aguilar, Jacoby Myers another year in the offense would help, right? You know, you got Stevenson and Damian Harris coming back. The O-line played better as the year got along. I think we all thought this offense could be better this year than last year. This is the big question mark, right? And so far, it looks like they're off to a slow start.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, a lot of these pieces, like, there was just nothing there. I mean, I just used the word suffocated. It was suffocating for them. And I just hope that Patricia is able to pull this together. But I've said this before, Justin, and I'll say it again. Now that we know it's Matt Patricia, that's right, the guy, this is so freaking unorthodox. If it was Joe Judge or if it was Nick Cayley, you know, okay, we're bringing in the young guy, and it didn't work, I could almost accept that. You hand the keys to your second-year quarterback in your offense to Matt Patricia, a reject and a failure as a head coach, a defensive coordinator, in his former life here in New England, and it falls apart, I'm sorry. Like, that's a fireable offense to me for Belichick. I love Belichick. I want this to succeed. I want at the end of the year to be eating crow on this. I want this to be rubbed in my face by you and all my friends that right, I'm saying this to. But I don't have confidence that's going to happen. Now, I feel like if this doesn't work, it's time to move the franchise in another direction. I really, really believe that.
Yeah, well, do you think this speaks to the fact that maybe it's, you know, a Band-Aid fix that he doesn't want to bring in the next long-term guy because he doesn't think he'll be here long-term, and he'd rather say, hey, instead of trying to bring someone in and teach him for a year or two, let's just bring somebody in and do a patch job, Band-Aid, you know, the problem, and see if we can make it to the next coach.
But if he wanted to bring in a crony of his, couldn't right, he find a crony that had at least coached in offense?
Yeah, I know. Well, that's right.
You know, it just doesn't make any sense.
No,
just,
I agree.
It's so far out of left field. Like, I'm not one to be calling for Bill Belichick's head, but I'm sorry. Right. This is left field. This is a crossroads year for this franchise. We have a second-year quarterback. We're going to know at the end of this year a lot about what this guy is. Look at Daniel Jones in New York. He came in. He looked terrific at points in his first year. And then what happened? His career went down the toilet. Maybe because of Joe Judge's coaching, by the way, and a right, couple other factors. Okay, if Mac Jones comes in, good start last year, he goes the wrong way, that is going to really set this franchise back another 3, 4, 5 years. And then that dynasty, man, that is like distant rearview mirror out the window.
Right.
And that's what we're going to know this critical crossroads year. Bring in someone that's actually coaching offense before if you want to bring in a crony. I mean, I don't know. There's got to be someone out there that could fill the gap for a year, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree 100%. It's going to be it's an interesting move, and it solely lies on Bill Belichick's shoulders at this point.
Solely does, right? Yeah. Solely does. And, you know, there have been people chirping about Belichick for years, even before Brady left.
Right.
I'm not one of them. I've been a pro-Belichick guy. This isn't – we are so far off the map of what's reasonable. I just think – This is not something you can ignore if this fails. All right, let me give you a couple of my other observations today from training camp, Justin. A couple other things that I noticed. There was a guy we mentioned last week, Tyquan Thornton.
Yeah.
Okay. He may be a total failure as a wide receiver. I have no idea what he's going to be, but I'm going to tell you something. I can see why they drafted this guy, because when he's out on the field, he has next level speed, and it's palatable. I mean, all these receivers, all these guys are fast, world-class fast guys. This guy's got a gear. It's Tyreek Hill-esque, and really? I don't say that lightly. I mean, this guy can really move. So I don't know if he'll be a good player, but he has a special level of speed that maybe, who knows, maybe he can turn into that explosive weapon that they've just lacked for so long.
Yeah, I hope so. You'd hate to see him become another special teams hero, right, in the Belichick system. We desperately need somebody like that, right? I think we all agreed that, you know, while the receivers we had weren't awful, right, at least I don't think they were awful, and while I think Devontae Parker helps us out, I don't think anybody we have in that receiver room can be considered a special talent, right, or a transcendent type of player. So you need somebody eventually that can, you know, you can pair with a young quarterback that you can consider a game changer, right? Somebody who can come in and stand up, stand out above everybody else. And so if he has, you know, unique speed, something that might allow him to do that, take a flyer on him.
He's a high upside guy.
Right.
And unlike, I mean, they've brought in guys, and like, for example, N'Keal Harry, right, or Sony Michel, where, you know, you saw them play and you said, well, maybe they'll turn into good players, but these aren't like physically impressive skill sets that they have. Tyquan Thornton has a physically impressive skill set. I mean, you know, he's out in that field. He's moving at a different level and a different speed than everyone else. Now, it might amount to nothing. There's a lot more than speed that goes into being a good wide receiver. But this guy, you know, when you watch them play, just to go back to our first conversation, I mean, they did look a lot today like last year in terms of just lacking that speed and that playmaking, that separation. Thornton is someone that can bring that to them if he develops,
right,
and I can understand why they brought him in and kind of reach for him. You know, I really can.
Did it look like they were like involving him, you know, early and often in the what was it, the training camp today? Or
well, today I don't know if he even caught a ball in 11-on-11 drills.
Yeah.
They did. They didn't throw a ton in the 11-on-11 today. I think they said only 8 times in the report I read. But you know, they were doing like just some drills.
Yeah.
One-on-one drills against defensive backs, and he was just blowing people away when he was doing that. So, you know, he's had a couple catches in some of the other practices. It does look like he's getting some run with the first team offense. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, next observation from training camp today. If Mac Jones gets hurt and Bailey Zapp ends up being the guy, first of all, Brian Hoyer, I didn't see him throw one freaking pass. So, I mean, he really is more or less like a coach on the field. It was Zapp threw a ton today, and he took a ton of reps, really splitting them almost with Mac. Maybe it was like 60-40 or 60, you know, 5-35, something like that. But he got a ton of run. If Mac were to get hurt and they had to rely on Bailey Zapp, get ready for like headless chicken football, because he doesn't know what he's doing yet.
Really?
And he just kind of, his instinct right now is to run around like crazy. He doesn't throw the ball great. You know, he threw a lot of ducks. He doesn't have great arm strength, frankly. But he really kind of, he has good legs and he kind of moved around a little, and he's going to be like almost like a Jimmy Garoppolo in his first 2 years, or like a Doug Flutie back in the day, a guy that's really going to just kind of scramble around and be kind of crazy. That's what he looked like today.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, when they drafted him, people were saying like, oh, that's a pretty good, you know, guy they got there, right? And I was even questioning why they'd went and got somebody like that right after, you know, they'd taken Mac Jones, because this guy's supposed to be like good and serviceable.
He was
right?
Super productive.
Yeah,
he's super productive in college. He's not physically talented, but I mean, I think all that arm strength is kind of overrated. Like, you know, if the guy can read a defense and deliver an accurate ball, and he can throw, you know, 40, 50 yards downfield, that's probably enough.
But it sounds like he's mobile too, right? He's got like that element,
mobility,
that, right?
Yeah. But not just like mobility, but that little like, you know, scrambling kind of, it seemed like he kind of had a little bit of like that. So
yeah,
I think it's going to be interesting if he would see some run, because if Matt gets hurt, I mean, I we'll see what happens. It's early in camp. I don't know what Hoyer's role is going to be on this team. I think that'll be that's going to be something we need to look at one of the games and see, like, what they do with Hoyer. When Matt goes out, who comes in? Is it Zapp or is it Brian Hoyer?
I mean, from what I saw out of Brian Hoyer the last few years. I haven't even seen Bailey Zapp, but I'd tell you I'd almost rather him come in anyway.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You know, Hoyer does not have much to offer at this point. Okay, next observation. Ramondre Stevenson was what caught a lot of passes. He caught the ball. He was in there a lot. And I think that he is going to get I would say 50-50 with Damian Harris, but honestly, he might end up being the guy. And he's going to be the guy on third down for sure. I think that's 100% true.
So I've had a sneaking suspicion for a while, for the last few weeks, that I think they're going to trade Damian Harris, right?
Yeah.
Like, do you think does it look like they're gearing up to maybe, because what, he's on the last year of his contract,
right.
Damian Harris,
he's
right?
He's on the last year.
So, I mean, you know, it would be very Bill, I think, to probably just get nothing for him and let him play out his last year. But do you try to, I mean, you just drafted two more running backs. You got White coming back. Stevenson looks good. Like, do you try to move on him while he's still got some capital?
I mean, I think it's a long year.
Yeah.
It's a long year, and you're going to need two bellwether backs.
Right.
And the other backs that they have, unless they really feel like Pierre Strong, can be a guy that can take 15, 20 touches a game. Stevenson wasn't that last year either,
right,
by the way. I think they're going to need Harris at some point, but would I be surprised? No. What do you think Harris gets if they were to trade him? You think a third round pick? What do they get him for? A third round pick?
I think you might be able to get him. You get a third round pick for him, yeah.
Maybe. What did they get for Michelle last year? A fifth?
Was it a fifth?
Or a sixth, maybe?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. That's great. So just comes to mind. So they traded their 2018 first round pick for a sixth last year, and the 2019 for a seventh this year. So that's great. That's great asset management, Bill. That's the best GM in the NFL, according to ESPN. But yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, you look at Michelle value. If Michelle got a sixth, you know, Harris is kind of in the prime. He's definitely a better back,
right,
than Sony Michelle. I think they could get a mid round pick for him. You know, but I think you'd have to ask: is it worth it to trade him for that mid round pick? It might be better to have him around.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, Justin, let's talk about a few other things that happened with the franchise this week. The Patriots signed, kind of out of left field, Devin Godchaud to a pretty, pretty heavy, financially heavy extension. I think they're paying him $11 million a year now, the next 2 years, with a pretty heavy bonus. Belichick called Godchaud one of the best defensive linemen in the league. I was really stunned that the Patriots went kind of all in on Devin Godchaud. He didn't strike me as really having a great year last year. What are your thoughts on that signing?
Yeah, I think the first thing I said to you was, am I mistaken when I say that last year he didn't stand out too much, right? Like, he didn't wow me last year. But, you know, the book on him coming into New England from, I believe, Miami, right, was that he was a very good, talented young player and that it was a good pickup for us, right? So I think last year, I mean, might have been one of those classic Patriots situations where, you know, you kind of got to get acclimated to the Patriots system and, you know, get some time under your belt before you get fully trusted in it, right? And maybe they saw what they needed to see last year and in the off season, and, you know, they like him. I mean, maybe he is that good. I don't know.
Well, Pro Football Focus did some, like, second half or something rankings last year.
Yeah.
And they had Godchaud, like, top five linemen for the second half of the year last
really?
Year. Which I thought was really interesting because, like you said, he didn't really stand out to me very much last year. Certainly, I think he got off to a very slow start.
Right.
And I kind of was moving the needle a little bit towards bust. And maybe in a way he kind of quietly came on,
right,
and we didn't really notice. But Belichick certainly made a huge investment in him. I mean, look, it's a bargain if he turns into a top defensive lineman. But, I mean, we're all concerned about the front seven, and he was a big part of that last year. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, I would love more than anybody for him to, you know, pan out and be one of the best linemen in the NFL, right? Have I seen anything to, like, make me confident of that? No, but we've been saying the Patriots front seven, that line, they need someone in the middle. You know, it seems like ever since we got rid of Will Fork, we haven't been able to find, like, a big, you know, stopper to put in the middle, right? And look, maybe he's going to emerge and surprise all of us.
Honestly, in a sense, it encouraged me because as much as we, you know, give Belichick a hard time for some of the personnel decisions the last few years, at the end of the day, if Belichick says that Devin Godchaud is worthy of an investment like that, that at least gives me some hope,
right,
that they've found a piece in their front seven. And they have four or five holes. I mean, besides right. Judon and Barmore, I think every other position, maybe Juwan Bentley, you could say too, because he's a good linebacker. But beyond that, they have so many holes. So if Belichick feels like this guy is the answer enough to make that kind of investment in him, I think that is at least hopeful that maybe that's one less thing on the list that they need to figure out.
So who's our other edge guy now? Because I mean, that doesn't sound like an awful line depending on who that other edge guy is. You got Judon, you got Barmore, you got Godchow, and then who's in the other end opposite him?
I'm not even sure. I think it's going to be open. I mean, open. I mean, I think that's going to be one of the things going
to
play out.
But I mean, that doesn't sound like a three bad people to start your D line with. But it's just there's a lot of question marks.
There's a lot of question marks. If Barmore can be more consistent,
right?
If Godchow can be what he was in the last six games versus the first 11 games. I mean, Judon can be what he was in the first 10 games. I mean, Judon fell off the map last year. Let's not forget about
that. I think he got a little injured. I do. I think he was banged up at the end of the year.
But maybe it was a COVID thing, because I remember he got COVID in the middle of the year, but he fell off the map. So, yeah, I mean, it would be great if they got another stable piece in their front seven, because they are, no matter what happens, they're going into this season with some big questions in their front seven.
Yeah.
There's no question about it.
Agreed.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about some of the comments that Belichick made about Mac on the first day of camp. And Belichick, in really a way that was quite unusual, went out of his way to praise Mac Jones.
Right.
And to not only praise him, but to say he has taken significant steps. He is much better than he was the year before. From Bill Belichick, that's effusive praise.
Right.
So what's behind that, Justin? Is that Belichick being sincere? Is there an ulterior motive here or an agenda? Why does Belichick go out on a limb and say that when he didn't have to?
I think like the old school Patriots fans in us like want to think that there's some sort of ulterior motive, right? Like Bill's playing mind games. He's using it as a motivation tactic, seeing if he can handle the pressure, yada, yada. And back in the early 2000s, mid 2000s, even the up until recent memory, I can't remember Belichick being outwardly affectionate or praiseworthy towards any of his players, right? And even the stars, guys like Tom Brady. So part of me just tells me that this is kind of part of like the changing Belichick that we've seen over the last couple of years. I don't know if it's necessarily an ulterior motive. I think maybe it is what it is. Maybe he actually does like the way Mac's progressing. He's been thrown for a curveball. He hasn't had to develop a rookie quarterback in a while, right? And maybe he's trying to, keep his confidence high. Mac's clearly seems like he's putting in the work, and Belichick wants to show him that he's trusted.
I agree with that. I don't think there is any ulterior motive. I just think he was sincerely impressed by what he said. But I guess my question for you would be, if that's the case, doesn't this put a ton of pressure on Mac Jones? And is that really a good thing for him right now?
Yeah. But you know what? Maybe the way Bill looks at it is he says, hey, look, I'm giving the kid the credit he deserved. If that's too much pressure for him to handle, then how the hell is he going to, lead us to a fourth quarter drive in the Super Bowl or something like that.
I agree with
that.
I mean?
So
I agree.
I don't think it's necessarily done intentionally to put the pressure on him, but I think he's well aware that it comes with pressure, and he knows that, okay, hey, look, if he can't handle this, then what are we doing here?
I agree with that. And it's a great point, because when you look at like Jarrett Stidham, okay, who ends up being an abject failure here. Right. What was the thing that kept Stidham from even getting on the field? There must have been something, right? He was psyched out by the competition with Newton, is what the rumors were. He was almost in awe of Cam Newton, and he just really couldn't handle the pressure of going in there and psychologically taking that job. Right. Even though he's someone that, from all reports, has some physical talent, and I think that Belichick has a very old school mentality in that way. Like, he doesn't care. He's not going to sugarcoat it. Like, he says the truth, and it is what it is. That's his famous saying, right? And if that puts a ton of pressure on Mac, hey, Mac, if you can't handle it, we'll find someone that can.
Right.
I think that's the mentality, and you're right. I mean, for Mac to be successful, look, he's going to have to handle it.
Right. Right. I agree.
All right. Let's move on to a couple other things. One or two more Patriots things, Justin, and then we're going to get into some more preview stuff, things around the league, things going on. Robert Kraft, finalist for the Hall of Fame this week. You know, hard to believe from where he started as kind of a local businessman, who, by the way, had worse seats than I did at the old stadium. He sat in 217. I sat in 218. But, you know, terrific guy, terrific owner, has built an empire. And Robert Kraft went from, you know, some guy that paid $160 million for the Patriots, which everyone in the sports media at the time said was too much money,
right,
to building that into an empire. And now Robert Kraft is someone that is, like, I would say, in the lexicon of American popular culture, like Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, most people know who Robert Kraft is. He's one of the faces of the league, frankly, for the last 20 years. Does Robert Kraft deserve to be in the Hall of Fame? Do you have any doubt?
Well, so I guess my first question would be, you know, is like, what's, you would know better than I do, but what was like a typical, you know, for like owners and, you know what I mean? Like for non-player personnel, like, is that like a huge rarity? Because I mean, you know, I can't think of too many people I'd put above him. But if it's something where it's like, you know, owners typically don't make the Hall of Fame and, you know, they're making an exception, then I'd be like, all right, well, you know, pump the brakes a little bit. But if you're trying to put an owner into the Hall of Fame, I mean, what owner are you going to name before him?
That's exactly right. I mean, can you think of an owner that deserves to be in the Hall of Fame more than Robert Kraft?
No, and you would know better than me, but
I can't.
It seemed like, you know, what he's done with the Patriots since he took over is a turnaround that very few owners or organizations can say. I mean, no organization can ever say they had a turnaround like that, but
right.
I mean, how many owners can even come close and say they came in and
right.
and delivered, you know, a third of the success that he did?
Absolutely. I mean, like, so, you know, I mean, like, all the other owner that comes to mind is Jerry Jones, right? Jerry Jones hasn't won a Super Bowl in 30 years.
Right.
I mean, that franchise has been a mess, really, since really 94 when they got rid of Jimmy Johnson for Barry Switzer. Like, you know, that team has barely scratched the surface of relevance. And, oh, by the way, what has Jerry Jones off the field really done for the league in that time? Like, Kraft has done a ton,
right?
You know, including solving the 2011 labor dispute that almost resulted in a strike. The closest to a strike the league has come probably since 1980s, and Kraft was the one that kept them on the field. So, right. I mean, when you look at his legacy, the success of the franchise, what this franchise has become, you know, I feel like, you know, he, of all owners, I can't think of another one that I think deserves it more than him. A lot of these guys, they put in posthumously, too. It'd be great to see someone go in when they're still alive.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
really, like, you know, Mara and Rooney. I mean, these guys were linchpins, cornerstones of the league. I think most of them went in after they died.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. You just look at what Kraft's done. You know, he's always kind of been, at least in my eyes, like the epitome of what a good owner was, right? You know, just seeing what he did with the Patriots, and you know, he I think he helped elevate them, right? He obviously, you know, made a ton of improvements and built that stadium. You know, he was the first, I believe, he made the Patriots the first NFL team to have their own private planes, right? Which he then turned around and uses, you know, for tons of humanitarian relief, charitable efforts, you know, all sorts of stuff like that. No, yeah, I love Robert Kraft. So yeah, I'm a big fan. I vote yes.
Absolutely, 100%. He deserves it. He's been one of the faces of the league. I feel like he's done things right by and large. I don't hold much. I know he had the incident in Florida a few years ago. Like I don't know. You know. I mean, I don't know if I judge him for that. I mean, this guy's had a huge track record. You know, of just doing things the right way, success, class. I mean, for like 30 plus years, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame as much as any owner, GM, coach, honestly, as that is in the league, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
Awesome. All right, well, let's move on. Let's talk about another Hall of Famer that had a pretty long run here, and that's number 12, Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. Justin, this week the Buccaneers suffered really a devastating injury with the loss of that center, Ryan Jensen. We know that Brady's weakness is if you can pressure him from the middle. Now, if there's anyone that can figure out how to find their way around that, it's TB12. But do you think that's a real blow to Tampa Bay's Super Bowl aspirations, the fact they lost a Pro Bowl caliber center? And as a second thought, should Brady have retired? Like, it just seems like some things aren't going so great to start the year off.
Well, all right. So they do, if you look at the positives, right, they got Chris Godwin, who will be back earlier than anticipated, right? They signed Julio Jones, which is something we were saying. I know he's a little older now, but something we were saying the Patriots should have done a long time ago, right? Bring an older veteran Julio in where he doesn't have to be, you know, an absolute standout stud. He can just be a nice complimentary piece in a good group of guys, which is what they have down there. They went back and brought, you know, they re-signed pretty much all that defense, brought pretty much everyone back. I don't hate it. I don't blame him for wanting to, you know, give it another shot, give it another run. It's obviously got to be tough to hang it up, right? I was actually very surprised when he retired, when he did, in the manner he did. I expected him to come back. But that being said, that's a huge blow, right? That's a huge blow. In, you know, whether it's enough to derail your season hopes, I don't know. We'll see. But, I mean, I can't think of too many people other than Tom Brady himself that you wouldn't want to lose, you know, going into the start of the year.
I think when you consider Brady's game and what he is right now, it's really a place where you can't afford to lose one of your better players. You know, it's funny, Justin, because when Brady is able to pick where he went, and everyone laughed, I think, a little, or was a little skeptical, maybe, or I was, when he went to Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
But there was actually a lot of good reasons why he went to Tampa Bay. That team was cresting, and they had a lot of pieces in place. Well, now, that was 3 years ago now.
Right.
And now, you know, a lot of that crest has kind of, I think, ebbed a little bit. It's come down. And now there are some legitimate holes on that team. Guys have gotten old. Guys have gotten hurt. Some guys have left. So it's not quite the favorable Shangri-La situation that it was when he picked it. Now he's got to kind of roll with the tide, if you will. And he's 3 years older, missing a key piece. I don't know. I mean, I feel like, I don't know. I think this is going to be a relatively mediocre year for Brady and the Bucs.
The only thing that could save him is the fact that the NFC is just, I think it's going to be a crazy down year for the NFC.
Crazy
and
down.
They happen to be in a conference where, look, I don't have too much hope for the Falcons. I don't have too much hope for...
terrible division.
You know, exactly. So if there's anything that's going to save them and maybe artificially carry this team to an NFC championship, it's that.
That is a great point, because the NFC is just so wide open, but I think the Bucs are a flawed team. What do you think about the Julio Jones signing? I mean, is it desperate move, right? Desperate move.
I like it when he doesn't need to go down there and be a dominant Julio Jones wide receiver one, right? You have Chris Godwin, you have Mike Evans, like, you know, he can come in there and be a complimentary piece. So I like that in that sense.
How many old guy receivers did they bring in when Brady was here and it just like didn't work out? Like, you know, Chad Johnson. I think didn't the Patriots have Torrey Holt?
But like, I feel like we brought those guys in to be like number one.
Reggie Wayne. Didn't the Patriots give Reggie Wayne?
He didn't even make it out of training camp.
Like, he just couldn't. Brady just, the rumor was that Brady and those players just couldn't get on the same page. And
maybe they couldn't get on the same page, you know.
Maybe it was the system in Belichick. You know, I don't know.
Look, I seem to remember bringing in guys that were past their prime, way past their days of being number one receiver, and expecting them to be the number, like bringing them in as the number one receiver, right?
Right.
If they had brought Julio Jones in to be the number one receiver down there, I'd say good luck. Because, you know, I would imagine he doesn't even play more than 10, 12 games max, right? He's always injury prone. But is the third wide receiver down there in Tampa? Yeah, I'd give that a flyer.
I mean, Chris Godwin coming off the ACL too. I mean, just to give some context to this, Jones in 2020, 51 catches, 771 yards, 3 touchdowns. And in 2021, 31 catches, 430 yards, and 1 touchdown. So in the decline, clearly in the decline,
right.
you know, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if Brady can get anything out of him. If anyone can, I suppose it's TB12. But right. I was really surprised by that move. All right, let's move Justin out to San Francisco, where I was really struck by what the 49ers have done with the quarterback situation and just the way they have just been totally willing to discard Jimmy Garoppolo like to the trash like he was nothing. Now I know Jimmy Garoppolo is in Joe Montana. No, he's not Aaron Rodgers. I understand that completely. He had them in the NFC Championship game last year. He had them in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. The guy wins, okay? The 49ers are a team that's a contending team in a wide-open conference, right. And they have a quarterback that has proven that he can get them to that level, okay? And they just threw him to the curb like he was a total bum to bring in Trey Lance, a second-year quarterback that took the fewest snaps of any first-round quarterback in the last 30 years or something like that,
yep.
That didn't even play college football in 2020 and because of the COVID, they canceled the season. And when he did, he played for FBS school and wasn't even going against top competition. I know people like Lance's physical skill set. I get it. The guy may be end up being a terrific quarterback. Do you agree with me that I think it's crazy that they just threw Garoppolo to the curb? Trey Lance is going to have some kind of learning curve. Right. Guy hasn't played enough quarterback, you know?
Yeah, I mean, well, are you saying, like, you're surprised they moved on or you're surprised they didn't want to keep Jimmy on the roster?
I'm both. I'm surprised Jimmy G's not starting or at least there. This is a team that is ready to contend for a Super Bowl in a wide-open NFC. If, you know, you put Jimmy G on that Niners roster – they're one of the three or four teams that I would say have a chance to make a Super Bowl this year. And now you're bringing in Trey Lance. Look it, they may still be a good team, but don't tell me Lance isn't going to have some growing pains.
I mean, look, yeah, I think there'll be some growing pains. But I mean, look, if you know he's the guy it's just a matter of when, right? Do you just pull the Band-Aid off now and get them in there and try to get them as much experience and as much you know, acclimation as they can, you know, while they're still a Super Bowl-ready team? You know what I mean? If you believe your upside is higher with Trey Lance, and why not try to get that learning curve out of the way and then acclimate him into a team that, like you said, is ready to win now?
Do you agree it's a huge gamble?
Massive gamble.
Massive gamble.
Massive
and like
gamble.
Kyle Shanahan, you know, he's kind of an arrogant guy. I mean, that's kind of his rep. You know, he's kind of an arrogant person. And this is an arrogant move. Like, this is like, I can develop this kid. Let me throw this pretty good quarterback I have. Yeah. Let me kick him to the curb and bring in this guy that hasn't played in 3 years and played against a bunch of guys that, you know, are in the Canadian Football League now, if even.
Yeah. I mean, well, look, one thing I will say that Shanahan's got going, and I'm always giving him shit when people compliments him because I'm always like, you know, what did he win? As far as I remember him blowing all his big games. You know, that being said, his quarterbacks are always at the top of the league in passer rating and completion percentage because he does do a great job of like scheming for them to be efficient, and he knows how to get the most out of his guys. So you know, he's got that track record. Maybe he can do that with Trey Lance. Maybe he can kind of harness that raw talent.
It just strikes me as so arrogant.
Yeah,
so
oh, yeah.
Arrogant. Like, if this doesn't work out, you know, and the Niners end up being like 6-11 this year, I mean, talk about a backfire, just a huge backfire.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's a big, big, big gamble. It really is. Let's talk a little, Justin, about Deshaun Watson. That's the big story around the league. Other big story around the league today. 6-game suspension. What are your thoughts on Watson getting the suspension? And is that the right amount? Should have been more? Should have been less? You know, what does that mean for the Browns now that we know he's probably going to miss at least 6 games?
I mean, look, without getting too deep into, you know, the issue at hand, you know, with Watson himself and, you know, the personal side of things, if he hasn't been convicted on any charges yet and no court has been able to, you know, file anything against him, then I don't think that his career and his livelihood should be ruined to the max, right? So that's number one. Whether you disagree with what he did morally, think it was wrong, think he's a scumbag, there hasn't been 20-something cases, not one criminal charge filed yet, right? So I look at that and I say, okay, that takes what would potentially be, in my eyes, up to a full season gone, right, and knocks it down to a 6 to 8 game suspension. So they had to do something, right, because they couldn't say, well, he was cleared in court, and we're just going to turn a blind eye, right? Like, there would be a PR nightmare for the NFL. So I think they were walking that line of saying, look, we can't throw the book at the kid. And, I'm sure there's a ton of pressure, too, coming from some of the owners, specifically the ownership in Cleveland, saying, hey, we just made a $300-something million investment in this kid, right? I'm sure they got had a lot of pressure coming from both sides. At the end of the day, I think I was expecting 8 games. I think 6 truly just goes to show you the fact that maybe some of it was overblown to an extent, because I think if there was a reason to give him 8 or more games, the NFL would have done it. So I think it's interesting.
I'm not an arbitrator, so I'm not going to speculate what he should have got or could have got, but what I am going to say is that this is a win for the Browns. It
Huge
really
win
is
for the
to
Browns,
only
yeah.
get a 6-game suspension. They were talking a year. We did the show 10 days ago, and I think we said, this has the potential, the Deshaun Watson trade, to be one of the most, the explosive right. franchise killing moves in NFL history. For him to only get a 6-game suspension, I think is a win for the Browns franchise. He'll be on the field for the majority of this year. Yeah. It might be a setback for them. It depends if they can sneak a few wins out in the first few weeks.
Yeah.
Maybe they can stay and hang in contention. I don't know. But long term, he didn't play last year. If he went a whole another full year without playing, it would have just been backbreaking, I think, to that deal and the investment they made in him. So they know he's going to be on the field this year, and it's 6 games. It's not totally crippling to their season.
Right. Yeah. No. It's it makes things very interesting, because especially you look at the first 6 games they have, and they can easily go 3-3. In
right.
those first 6 games, you know what I mean? And Jacoby Brissett has been a serviceable backup his entire career.
So they can win a few games.
Right.
Yeah, and by the way, the Patriots play them in week 6.
Yeah, we're the final game before
which is
he
lucky,
comes back.
Which is
right.
lucky, but right. I'll take it. Like, I'm not qualifying wins like anymore. Like, I'll take the crippled team, the team yeah. that's without their good player, and take the win, because honestly, this franchise where they are, they need every win they can get at this point. This isn't like the Brady years where you're like, I want to see their best play our best.
Right,
no, that's
right,
gone
right.
now.
Yeah.
That's gone now. We need all the wins we can get. I'll take Deshaun Watson suspended. It's a win for the Patriots, and 6 games is a big win for the Browns. So let's move on to Philadelphia, where let's hold off on that one. Let's move on to Deebo Samuel in San Francisco. Now he that was the other sort of big news of the last 24 hours. He signs an extension, and if you really look across the league, Justin, all these sort of contract-y type situation, Kyler Murray, DK Metcalf, Deebo Samuel, they all kind of resolved with one glaring exception, and that's Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. What is the deal with that situation? Why haven't they signed him out? Is Lamar Jackson really going into this year without a contract extension? What is going on down there?
I've heard, and I'm not sure if it's 100% true, that he doesn't have an agent.
He doesn't have an agent.
Right.
That's true.
So he does. So that could be the first place where there's an issue, right?
Yeah,
like
totally.
That's got to be part of it, the fact that he doesn't have an agent. The other part of it, I don't know. Does it sound like, for a team like the Ravens that I feel like put so much commitment into building that organization around Lamar when they drafted him, right? They retooled that whole like offensive strategy and game plan. They built the Ravens to be a team conducive to Lamar Jackson, and it seems like they're afraid to make the big commitment. So it's interesting, because they've built a team around Lamar, and now they're hesitant to commit to him for the long
term. And what they're really doing is they're really just costing themselves money.
Yeah.
Because this has been going on since last summer. If they signed him last summer, they would have gotten a much better deal for him than now with Kyler Murray, Deshaun Watson. His price is going up. Kyler Murray hasn't won an MVP.
No.
Deshaun Watson hasn't won an MVP. Lamar Jackson's won an MVP. He's a better quarterback than Kyler Murray. He's a better quarterback than Deshaun Watson based on performance, frankly, and winning percentage. So, you know, he's going to go into that negotiating room and he's going to make that argument. Yeah. I'm a better player than both those guys. I deserve to be paid more. It's costing the Ravens money. You know, I am getting to the point where I'm starting to wonder if the Ravens don't really believe in him as what we think he is. You know, if John Harbaugh, you know, Dennis Tien and Justin Fine and all the talking heads in the media, we look at Lamar Jackson as an MVP caliber player. Maybe the Ravens don't think he's as good as we think he is.
It's tough. I mean, their actions are certainly saying that they potentially don't think that, right? I mean, what do you think it meant when they traded away one of his best friends and his number one target on draft night, right?
That's a great point.
You know, that, I mean, like,
that's a slap in the face from a franchise.
Huge slap in the face.
You don't even sign him.
No.
You know what I'm saying? You don't even sign Lamar. Like, okay, right. We have to trade him. We can't afford you both, but here's your contract. No. Exactly. You haven't signed Lamar yet, and you traded away his weapon.
Right, and they haven't brought in anybody to replace him.
No one. I think they drafted someone. I think their first round pick might have been a receiver.
They got a rookie. Yeah, they still got like that kid Duvernay, and they got Rashad Bateman, the guy they drafted last year.
Right,
and I think they might have drafted another young kid. But I mean, nobody to
no one of significance.
Right, no one of significance. Exactly, yeah. And that was a team again that was very injured last year.
Right.
But no, yeah, you would think coming back healthy, they would be doing everything they can to gear up and make a run at it. But yeah, it's interesting.
I mean, like I say all the time, if you have the quarterback, you can plug in the pieces. And it seems like the Ravens, you know, we think the Ravens have the quarterback and they should be able to plug in pieces and be a contender. And it feels like they're almost going the other way.
Yeah.
And it's really one of the stranger situations in the league in the last few years. Like, this is going to the point where, you know, I would say 50-50, Lamar Jackson's not a Raven next year.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be very interesting, especially, you know, talk about where he could potentially land and the type of money he could command in the open market. Be very interesting.
Absolutely. He would command a ton in the open market. A team like, you had mentioned this a few weeks ago, the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
What do you think they'd pay for Lamar Jackson? He's a Miami kid. You know,
yeah.
And that team, you know, with that kind of weapons that they have on that team, and you put someone explosive as Jackson on there,
I know
they vault to the top of the conference, right? Okay, let's move to Carolina next. Not a franchise or a team we talk about very often, but I think it's interesting that you know, we talk about Deshaun Watson and now we know what his situation is. Baker Mayfield's kind of the leftovers, the forgotten man from this whole situation. Do I love Baker Mayfield as a quarterback? No. I think he's gotten a raw deal? Absolutely. I think he's gotten a raw deal. Do I think he's at least a good quarterback? Yeah. I mean, the Browns were what, 12-4 2 years ago, and they beat the Steelers in the playoffs. They almost beat the Chiefs in the playoffs. It's crazy to me that they threw this guy to the curb and made the investment they did in Watson and the gamble they took on Watson. Has Baker Mayfield found a home in Carolina? What are your expectations, Justin, for that Panthers team?
So I actually, look, I'm not as down on the Panthers. I think they're a middle of the road franchise this year, right? I think, like, if Baker's healthy, I think they'll be a team. I think they'll finish around, 9-8, maybe 8-9, give or take a game or two, right? I think that's like their wheelhouse. They have some playmakers, right? You got guys like Christian McCaffrey. Can he stay healthy, right? You got some good players like DJ Moore.
DJ Moore is a great
one, right? They have an up-and-coming defense that, you know, started to really take form last year. I think they did a little rebuilding to that O-line, right? So can a scorned Baker Mayfield come in here with something to prove and, like, elevate this team to a potential, you know, 10-7, 11-6 record, and maybe have them in the NFC? That could potentially get you a wild card this year. Three wild cards.
Absolutely.
You know, you go 10-7 and be really in the hunt for a playoff spot. I'm not expecting big things out of the Panthers, but by no means will I be surprised if I see him playing football in the postseason.
Agreed. And I mean, I think I'll say this. It's a huge upgrade over Sam Darnold and what they had last year. I mean, Sam Darnold's trash. He's a terrible quarterback. And, you know, I've said this multiple times on the show. We talked about it right from the beginning of last year. I mean, I watched this guy play for the Jets. He's got nothing. He was a terrible draft pick, a terrible idea. A classic case of taking a guy because he looked the part, sounded the part, went to the right college, but he just didn't have it. And you could see that in New York. And and I'm not surprised. So I don't think – I think Mayfield is a huge upgrade because I think Mayfield can play some. He might not be what you would hope for in a number one draft pick, but he's not a bad quarterback. He's he's a quarterback you can win with, and he's a quarterback you can make a playoff run with. And, and by the way, he's still a young quarterback. This is his fourth season, so he could still develop and take steps with his career. I mean, he's not a total washout. Do you think Sam Darnold will ever start again? Like, I mean, I know he'll start if Mayfield gets hurt, or if someone gets hurt, he could be a backup that has to start. But will any? Well, I mean, Darnold's career as a starter is done, right? No franchise ever brings him in again.
Yeah, I mean, he would have to, again, like, to be a starter, he would have to get a shot as a backup somewhere and absolutely light the place on fire, right? That's the only way he ever gets another shot.
Possibility.
Right. Exactly.
Which just isn't going to happen.
No, he'll never get signed as another starting quarterback. No.
He sucks. Okay, let's go to the Texans. This is a team, again, we don't talk about this team often, but, you know, I do think there's something interesting about that team, and that is Davis Mills.
Yeah,
and if you really look at it, he was the second best rookie quarterback last year.
100%.
So Justin, am I crazy? Am I crazy to have part of me say right now that I might take Davis Mills over Trevor Lawrence? Is that totally mental?
No, because that was my take last year at the end of last year, and I got laughed at on another podcast when I said it. I said Davis Mills was the second best quarterback in that draft class. He played like the second best quarterback in that draft class, right? If I look at the Texans and I look at the Jaguars last year, those were two awful franchises, right? From a talent standpoint, I think the Jaguars had more talent on that roster than the Texans. I didn't see a single game that Trevor Lawrence elevated the Jaguars to a win and made them look like a team that has a young team with potential, right? I saw that with Davis Mills. They won a few games because of Davis Mills. They competed in a few games, even though they lost, because of Davis Mills. Davis looked like somebody that had potential to build around. I didn't see that with Trevor. I really didn't. So, no, I don't think you're crazy at all, and I agree with you.
I'm shocked because I thought you were going to tell me I was crazy.
No.
But look, in medicine, we have something called anchoring, okay? It's when a patient comes in and you as a doctor, you decide what the diagnosis is based on your initial impression, and you get anchored to that and you don't think about other things, right? And why do I bring this up? Because we are also anchored to this idea of Trevor Lawrence being this generational player that we can't get over the overwhelming evidence we got last year that said the opposite. Now, I know I'm not totally putting the nail in the coffin for him, but I put more stock in what I saw from a quarterback as a starter for 1 year than what I saw for him in 5 years of college.
I agree.
And for all the excuse making people do for Trevor Lawrence, okay, why don't you think critically a little bit about what he had around him in college? He had some terrific talent around him in college. He had a terrific, I mean, come on, Clemson? I mean, that's like 95% of his games. It's like high school playing middle school. Right. Yeah, I mean, people hold that against Mac Jones all the time. They don't hold that against Trevor Lawrence. It doesn't make any sense. People are so anchored to this idea that this guy is this generational talent, that the idea that maybe, just maybe, he's just another bust is totally unorthodox to him. What Davis Mills did last year in arguably a worse situation, I think that has to take some stock. I'm willing to forget about what Trevor Lawrence's reputation. It doesn't mean anything to me at this point. I believe what I see on the field, and I didn't see much from Lawrence last year.
No, I didn't see much either. And I'll go back to my previous point that I didn't see Trevor Lawrence once elevate the Jaguars, even for a quarter or even a drive,
absolutely,
to the point where I said, "Oh, this is a young team with potential."
Absolutely. He, and that's a great point, because like, it wasn't just that he was kind of like meh. You know, he was bad.
He's bad.
Really bad.
Yeah.
And he didn't do anything. And it's again, oh, it was Urban Meyer. Maybe it was. I don't know. Oh, it's the Jaguars. Well, I think they have better talent than people give them credit for. You know, I don't know. I just feel like people make so many excuses for this guy.
Yeah.
I honestly, I'd put the probability that Trevor Lawrence develops into a good starter right now at less than 50%. Like I
100% agree with you.
And I'd probably say the same about Davis Mills. So you know, I don't know. Maybe that's crazy, but that's I honestly think they probably have pretty comparable chances of turning into, you know, viable, good NFL caliber starting quarterbacks.
Yeah.
All right, man. Yeah. Let's one more topic, and then we're gonna talk some big picture stuff about the league, and we'll be done in a few minutes. Okay, the Rams, Les Snead. Okay, I was reading in a magazine this week. The Rams will have gone 8 years without a first round pick from 2016 to 2024. They do not have a first round pick. That is crazy. That is so unorthodox in the NFL. Do the Rams need to win another title, Justin, to validate their approach, or is it already validated? When you win a Super Bowl in an 8 year run, you want a ring that by definition puts you in the top quarter of the league.
You know, it's deceiving, because when you talk about the capital that they gave away and, you know, the trades that they made, you would say initially that you need to win two or three Super Bowls for that to be worth everything that you gave away, right? But then I look at it and I see how many teams haven't won a Super Bowl in the last 20 years, let alone the last, you know, 5 years, right? And I'm like, you know, these teams are they got their first round picks, right? They're drafting, like they're doing their thing, and they're not producing any results, right? So if he's coming in and saying, "Hey, I'm going to get my team a Super Bowl," and he does it, you can't really complain about it.
It worked.
You got a Super Bowl. There are teams that did not do this strategy that are trying to make their best educated pick every first round and yada yada and so on and so forth and build a franchise.
And trading N'Keal Harry and Sony Michel for 6 round picks
right.
3 years later.
Exactly. You know? So
you're. I mean, I think one thing we've learned is that there are players in these middle and late rounds, and you know, if you get the chance to get top level talent, and this is, I think, different now than it's ever been in the NFL before.
Right.
Make an aggressive play to get top level talent. You see more trades. You see more big free agent signings. You know, you need those players.
Yeah, I agree.
So to feed that into our next to last topic, okay? Last week we talked about the Chiefs and saying how the Chiefs weren't a dynasty contender anymore. We were sold on the Chiefs as a dynasty contender. They're clearly heading the other way. I doubt they're going to be a team that wins 3 out of 4 or 4 out of 6 Super Bowls, something like, you know, like that. Who is the dynasty? Who is the franchise that is closest to being a dynasty, Justin? And quite honestly, is there one right now? Because there have been historically in the NFL decade long runs where there just is no dominant team.
Yeah, I mean, look, I tend to lean right off the bat that there is no franchise out there. Right? I mean, the dynasty out there right now. I mean, like you said, the Chiefs were the closest thing, and I wouldn't consider them by any means a dynasty.
No way. Not only would I not consider them a dynasty now, I don't think they're heading in the right direction. Like we talked about last week, I mean, they're not going to be a dynasty.
No,
they're losing too much momentum.
So look, I'll tell you a team that by no means are they a dynasty or even on the verge of being a dynasty, but I'll tell you a team that has potential.
Yeah.
I think the Buffalo Bills have potential, because I think that's a team that's built that they could realistically, win 2 or 3 out of the next 5 if they, you know, stay in the trajectory they are and they keep adding those complementary pieces. You got a guy like Josh Allen, right, who's shown you what you can do with plenty of the holes that they had. But they still haven't won anything, right? So I guess to answer your question directly, no, I don't think there's any team out there currently that is threatening to be a dynasty.
I mean, obviously, for a team to threaten to be a dynasty, they have to win one first.
Right.
And that's the problem with Buffalo.
Right.
If Buffalo had won last year,
exactly,
and they should have won last year, they were the best team last year,
right,
and they would have won if they got through Kansas City, then I think you would absolutely have every right to say they have a chance to be a dynasty, because you're right. If you're going to look across the landscape right now, who's got the best chance to win multiple rings? Buffalo is as good a pick as any. There is no clear-cut pick at this point. Like 2 years ago, if we talked about this, we would have said Kansas City. That's not the case anymore.
100%.
The franchise that has the best chance to win multiple rings is the Rams, because the Rams are going to have a window of 2 or 3 years here where they're going to be able to win another Super Bowl. If they win another Super Bowl, does that really make them a dynasty if you win 2 out of 4 or 2?
I think you got to at least hit 3 out of 5 or 3 out of 6.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the standard.
I mean, the Cowboys were 3 out of 4. Both Patriots were 3 out of 4 and 3 out of 5.
Yeah.
You know, the Steelers were 4 out of 6 in the 80s. So, I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't know if the Rams win another one, if you really can call them a true dynasty. But I think that they are the closest to multiple. But Buffalo is a good call. I mean, that's a franchise that if they can somehow win a Super Bowl, Yeah, they could win two out of three or three out of four. Absolutely.
I'm also wondering when the cliff is going to come for the Rams as a franchise, right? Because doesn't it just seem like they're due for that entire team to fall off
it's
the
like
map
they're robbing
and rebuild,
from
right?
Peter to pay Paul. Like, how long can you do it?
Exactly. So I don't know. I'm skeptical how long they can keep that up, but who knows?
Absolutely. It's a good point. But I do think the Rams are going to have a window here for two years, I'd say the next two seasons, where they're going to have it. And then they're going to have to make some more crazy moves.
Do you think they're the NFC favorites this year?
I do. Yeah. I do. And I picked them last week. Yep. I think they're the best team in the NFC.
Yep.
The NFC's wide open this year.
It is.
With San Francisco going to Trey Lance, Seattle's rebuilding. I mean, Arizona just really didn't show me much. They got off to a very fast start and fell apart last year.
Yeah.
I mean, they really got a path to that division and by extension, the whole conference. So that kind of brings us to the next topic and the last topic, Justin, which is, you know, I want you to give me one team in each conference that you think is going to exceed expectations and one team that's going to disappoint.
Sure. All right. So I'll start with the AFC. I'm going to continue with my team that I said that I really liked last year, right? And I say exceed because in my mind, I actually expect them to win the AFC. But a lot of people are down on them, and that's the Broncos. I love the Broncos. I think that's a complete team. And I think that's a team that has just as good a chance as any to emerge in the AFC. I'm going to say my disappointment is going to be, and I know who yours is probably going to be. I almost took them, but I'm going to say the Bengals.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to say the Bengals just because as much as I love Joe Burrow, you know, I love that offense. I don't like that coach. I don't like Zach Taylor. Okay, I hate his slow pace of play out there. I hate his run-first mentality. You have a high-flying offense and a young gun at quarterback. You drafted Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. Let them air the ball out and let that offense cook. On top of that, I think that's a defense that got – I think they played a little bit better than they are last year. You know what I mean? Also, just trend analysis. You always see the Super Bowl loser, or you typically see the Super Bowl loser regress a little bit in the following year, right? It's a tough bounce.
It's a trend. It's an absolute trend.
So I'm going to pick the Bengals to be my disappointment for the AFC. In the NFC, this team I have exceeding expectations, not because I necessarily think they're going to light the NFL ablaze, but because I haven't heard anybody talking about them in terms of any sort of expectations at all. And in an NFC that's wide open, in a division like this that's wide open, I'm going to say that the Minnesota Vikings have a chance to find themselves in the playoffs this year. This is a team that, other than Green Bay, they're in a god-awful division. They're in an awful conference, right? They just brought in Green Bay offensive coordinator, right? Hackett. I believe it's Hackett, right? So from what I'm hearing, everyone in Minnesota is excited about this new offense that they're bringing to the table. They're going to unleash their weapons a little bit. That just seems like a team that was knocking on the door for like the last 5-10 years in terms of like wanting to break through and win an NFC championship, make it to the Super Bowl, and they just continuously fell short. And maybe this year, you know, they finally have what it takes with this new coach to make that push. That defense is finally getting a little bit healthy. You know, they got some pieces back. For disappointment, I'm going to say the Cowboys. I think that's low hanging fruit, but I'm going to
very low.
Yeah,
but it was a good pick.
But I'm going to take it. Look, I think that's a team that you know, they'll always be in the spotlight. They're obviously again in kind of another crappy division, and I think one of the reasons I say disappoint is because I think not that, you know, they're that good of a team, but because I think people's expectations are that the Cowboys are that good of a team. They burnt me last year, and I'm not going to make that same mistake again. I think this team takes a step back in a few different ways this year.
Yeah, that's a great pick. I'll start with mine in the AFC. I had a really hard time thinking of an AFC team that is going to exceed expectations, and I think that's partially because the expectations are so high in the AFC right now for a lot of these teams. Denver is a good pick. I'm going to go with the Texans. And I'm not saying the Texans are going to be a contending team, but I just think people expect them to be a rock bottom team. Lovie Smith was a pretty good coach when he was in Chicago. Davis Mills is probably going to be an okay quarterback. couple other pieces in place there. I think that are they going to be a world beater? No, but I think they can win seven games and be respectable. And for that franchise, that would be progress. So you know, if I had to pick another team that I think is going to exceed, the Raiders would be my other team. And I don't think the Raiders are going to be great, but I think they're going to go from a fringe playoff team to a solid playoff team. It doesn't, you know, do I think they're going to win the division? No, but I think they're going to be in it. My disappointment in the AFC, I got two that come to mind. Number one is the Chargers. We talked about it last week. I'm out. I'm not buying the hype. I don't like Staley. I don't like the analytics model, and I think Herbert's got a lot to prove. Another one that's been a really good team the last few years that I think is going to fall off the map this year is the Titans. I think the Titans fall apart this year. This is the year Derrick Henry gets old. This is the year, you know, Tannehill, you know, he's kind of mediocre. They traded A.J. Brown, replaced him with a rookie. I think the Titans, you're going to see bottom of the conference type 5-6-ish win team this year and maybe a rebuild. The NFC, my team that exceeds expectations, don't sleep on the New Orleans Saints. They were good last year until Winston got hurt. He was having a terrific year. I know they lost Peyton. He's a good coach, but they got a lot of pieces in place. They're getting Michael Thomas back. They've got Jameis Winston healthy again. I think that team in a wide open NFC South division, you know, I feel like that team will be a borderline playoff team, which is in excess, I think, what most people are counting on. And my disappointment is the Bucs. I'm sorry. I just don't see it this year. They got too many old players, too many question marks. I think Brady has to take a step back at some point. I know he's still the GOAT, but this is not the fantasy team that he went to a few years ago. Godwin's coming off an ACL. They lost a few of their depth pieces, and now they lost one of their key pieces on their offensive line. I think that team is not a bad team. By any means, not a bad team, a playoff team for sure, but just maybe not a Super Bowl caliber team that we're expecting, even in a very weak conference.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay. All right, my man, anything else you want to add?
No, just another week down, another week closer, and now we're going to have legal betting for week one. So.
Well, next week there's actually a preseason game. On Thursday. So
is that the Hall of Fame game? Is that next week?
Well, that's next week on Monday. And then I think the Patriots play on Thursday, August 11th.
Like an actual preseason
game.
Like week one of the preseason?
Week one of the preseason against the Giants.
We're already there, huh?
We're already there. So I think we will probably record on Friday next week.
Yeah.
That way we'll have plenty to talk about. You know, camp. I mean, the storylines aren't going to change for camp. Like, it's already, you can tell, it's already set in motion. It's going to be the crappy offense, Matt Patricia. We already talked about what's there. Like, you know, so it's going to be ad nauseum by next Thursday. We're going to be dying for even a preseason game. That's how it always is, that first preseason game. I mean, look, it's great to watch. The preseason is very frustrating because it's unfulfilling, but you know, it's better than training camp and it's better than nothing, you know? So when that first game comes, it's exciting. So we'll record on Friday with another episode that should probably drop next week and next weekend. And until then, you know, we'll keep our eyes open and hope that the narrative changes a little and maybe the Patriots offense looks a little better coming up in the next few weeks. Right, Justin?
Yeah, we'll see. Well, but, you know, that's probably going to be, like you said, the focal point for the next couple of weeks, right? Get us to week one and then we'll actually be able to see what happens.
Well, look, it's like, look, in week eight, is any of this going to matter? No. You know, it's not going to matter. Like, it's just, this is what we're talking about now. It's not good that they look so bad right now, but if they come out and they do well in the regular season and it's happened before, then it's going to be forgotten about in a millisecond.
Right. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Awesome, man.
We'll catch you guys next week.
We'll catch you guys next week. Thanks, everyone that listened. Have a great week. I hope everyone enjoyed the DFP podcast, and we'll get back to it next week. Take care, everyone.